Mr. Chairman, will dedicate the shiur to Eliezer ben Menachem Mendel, Shreve and Aliyah's Neshama. Okay. So the bottom here of Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. Omer of Kahana. You'll see this mamish at the bottom of the Amud. Dorash Rabbi Nosson Bar Miriomi Mishmei de Rabbi. Mishmei de Rabbi Tanch. So we have here a drosha in the name of Rabbi Tanch. Now we turn to Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph. Larry, can I show you just to close the door behind you, if you don't mind? Ner shel Chanukah shehinicha lemala mi'esrim ama psua. So we spoke about the fact that the Ner Chanukah should be within 10 tfachim of the ground. And the reason for that is because Rosh Hashanah Rabbim only goes up to 10 tfachim. But what's the maximum height? And Rabbi Tanchum establishes that the maximum height is 20 amos. Now, Tosis points out over here that the word psula is out of place. You and I would have said that's the right word, psula. That the Ner Chanukah, if you place it too high, is possible. But Tosis says the following, that there are two words. And the Gemara at the beginning of Sukkah analyzes the difference between these two words. One word is called psula, and the other is yema'it. So let me write this on the board for those who want to see it in front of their eyes, because this is very important. Of course, we don't know where the eraser is, but we'll use some sort of primitive method here. Okay. There's something called psula, that's one terminology, and there's another terminology called yema'it. Okay? Now, first let's explain the difference between these two terms, and then we'll try to analyze when does the Mishnah or the Braisa choose this term or the other term. So first of all, the word psula means that you got to start from scratch. That the whole effort is futile, and whatever you accomplish until this point is invalid. So start from the beginning. So let's say, for example, if he puts his sukkah above 20 amos from the ground. Now, when I say sukkah, what am I referring to?
Schach.
Right. Sukkah equals schach. That's our equation. So if the schach is 20 amos above the ground. Psula here in this case would mean that you have to remove the schach and replace it. There's another term which is not used in sukkah, and the Gemara is going to analyze why, and that's called yemait. Yemait means that if it's too high, just simply lower it. You don't have to change anything fundamentally, you just have to lower it. And yemait means that there's a tikkun, there's a way of rectifying the situation, you don't have to start from scratch, if you're following me. So the Gemara at the beginning of Sukkah analyzes why is it that in certain cases when we find that something is above 20 amos or above the height that's allowed, the Mishnah or the Braisa will utilize the term psula, like in the case of Sukkah, and other times, what are the guidelines? When does it say mamait? And the Gemara says the following, that if we're dealing with a mitzvah d'oraisa, then it's going to say psula. If we're dealing with a mitzvah derabbanan, it's going to say yemait, lower it. In other words, in the case of a mitzvah derabanan, we don't have to undermine everything that went on, just lower it to make sure that it's below 20 amos. The Gemara, for example, gives the case of what's called a korah. Okay, there's something called a lechi and a korah, which means, okay, let's just give a little bit of background here. There's something called a mavoi. Okay, now this concept of mavoi is very very fundamental in Masechta Erevin, and also to some extent in Masechta Shabbos. So what happens is when we're dealing with Shabbos, a mavoi is going to be a place where you cannot carry something. Now, what does it mean? Let's say, for example, you have many houses, many homes that spill into a mavoi. Technically, the mavoi is not called a reshus harabim because there are walls around the mavoi, technically. But it looks to the eye as if it is a reshus harabim because there's so many people walking through this thoroughfare. And everyone here can think in their own hometowns, you know, in Western civilization, you know, of places which in the urban areas are very public, but they happen to be square. Surrounded.
Square.
Like a square. Like, for example, I don't know if you've been to Sony in New York, now they have a pizza shop over there, and it's mamish enclosed, but again, it's a major thoroughfare. You go from, I don't remember, 5th Avenue to 6th Avenue, you can go through this thoroughfare. Right. But it's technically not considered a reshus harabim. Therefore, if I would carry something from my house into this mavui, technically, I'm okay. I haven't violated any Iser Hotzah because that mavui, insofar as it's surrounded by mechitzos, is not a reshus hayochid. I'm sorry, is not a reshus harab because it's surrounded by mechitzos. However, the Chachamim were afraid that if we'd allow you to carry into a mavui, you may make the next step and accidentally, mistakenly, carry into a reshus harab. So they required an eruv. This eruv is called either a lechi or a korah. The difference between a lechi and a korah is that a korah is horizontal and a lechi is vertical. And either one will suffice. Now, what does the lechi or the korah accomplish? Okay. And it has to be placed right in the entrance into the knisa, you know, the entryway into the mavui. It makes what's called a heker, so that people realize that this is not your classical reshus harabim, because you don't put a lechi or a korah on the entryway into reshus harabim. Once the message is conveyed that it's not a reshus harabim, they get the idea that, you know, this is not a reshus harabim because of this strange phenomenon that all of a sudden they equip the entrance into the mavui with a lechi or a korah. So that's called heker, and it's meant to convey a message. Again, why they couldn't just put up a sign that would say this is not a reshus harabim, I don't know. But that's the way the chachamim established it. Oh. So again, the Mishnah is going to tell us in Erevin that if this lechi is above 20 amma, then that's not sufficient. Why? Because it's above 20 amma, that's not called a heker. Anything that's above 20 amma is outside of the normal range of human vision. When I say normal range, I mean when you're walking down the street, you know, you're on ground level, you don't usually raise your eyes above 20 amma. And there the language is you might. He just has to lower it down. It doesn't say psula. So the Gemara at the beginning of Sukkah says, why in the case of Sukkah does the Mishnah use the term psula if it's above 20 amma? And yet, when we get to the case of a korah that's being set up above 20 amma off the ground, then there the Mishnah uses the language you might. So far so good?
Yeah.
So the Gemara answers, because Sukkah is d'oraisa, and there, if you place your schach above 20 amos, you have to start from scratch. You have to take the schach off the defanos and replace it on the defanos. But in the case of a mavui, with regard to a korah, if the korah was placed above 20 amos, all you have to do is you might. All you have to do is lower the korah. And there are many different ways of lowering the korah. You can lower the korah physically by lowering it, or you can or you can fill in, you know, you can fill in earth on the ground level, so it's no, the korah is no longer above 20 amma, and that's called yamayim. So why do I mention this to you? Because Rabbi Tanchum in his drush on the top line here in Chav Beis says that Ner Shel Chanukah Sheinicha L'malam Esrim Amma Psula. Since we're guided by the rules of the sugya at the beginning of Sukkah, then the proper terminology, appropriate terminology would have been what?
Yemayit.
Why? Because since we're dealing with the mitzvah derabanan, like the case of a korah and a mavui, and you want to be matir tiltul in a mavui, then all you have to do is yemayit. If it's above 20 amma, just yemayit, lower it. There's no requirement to start from scratch. You don't have to take it apart. Just lower it. And as I said, you don't even have to physically lower it. You could just raise the ground, so to speak, fill in the gaps on the ground. So that's what Tosfos says, v'yim tomar, havi le lemeimar yemayit kmo gabi mavui. Rabbi Tanchum should have used the terminology yemayit, the same way the Gemara says at the beginning of Sukkah, by a mavui, the amrinan hasam, mavui derabanan. When it's a drabbana, all you have to do is do a tikkun, which means you have to lower it below 20 amma, tani takanta. That's the choice of the terminology yamayit. And here, when we're dealing with the Ner Chanukah, to our surprise, he uses the terminology psula, and that seems to be inappropriate. So Tosfos says, ikal meimar did not got psula, mishum deboil meimar kisuka. Okay, we didn't read the next word in Rabbi Tanchum. Let's do that now. Rabbi Tanchum adds kisukah, which means that the Ner Chanukah has the same status as the sukkah. Just like it's the Mishnah at the beginning of Sukkah says that sukkah l'malam yesrim am is psula, so too he's extending that din to apply to Ner Chanukah. So in other words, Tosfos at this point is giving a very technical answer to his question, that even though the word psula is really inappropriate here, but we use it agav urcha, meaning since we're mentioning sukkah, and in case of sukkah the appropriate term is psula, therefore we use the word psula even for what? For ner Chanukah. Inami, now Tosfos gives another explanation. He says, lo ratza laharich, and the reason why he uses the word psula here is because if he would have used the word yemayit, then we would have come to a mistaken conclusion, and we would have had to clarify that by adding a whole bunch of words. And therefore he simply says psula. What would have been what would have forced us to add a bunch of adjectives, a bunch of words, if he would have used the word yemayit? He says he would have had to say, number one, yichabenu, he's got to extinguish the light, and then v'yematenu, and then v'yachzor v'yadlikenu. Which means that it's not just enough to take the lit candle and lower it below 20 amma, but in this case, you really have to start from scratch. Here's where Ner Chanukah is halachically similar, despite the fact that it's the Rabbanon, to Sukkah. And just like in the case of Sukkah, you've got to lower the schach by taking it off and putting it on again. So too in the case of Ner Chanukah, you have to extinguish the light, lower the candle, and then relight it. And Tosfos doesn't tell you why that's so. Does anybody want to take a stab at it? What concept here makes Chanukah, Ner Chanukah, into almost a quasi doraisa, which means psula, and you're going to have to put out the candle and then lower it and rekindle it? Do not anybody have a certain concept in mind? It's got one word concept that really defines the nature of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. And in that sense, it's radically different than a korah in the case of a heter mavui. Exactly, hadlaka. And this is based on a gemara that we're going to get to in mitzvah called hadlaka osa mitzvah. I think we've discussed this and touched on it at least in the past, that the mitzvah of Chanukah is not seeing to it that there is a ner doluk, but rather the hadlaka is the mitzvah. For example, the gemara already established back on Daf Chaf Aleph that kovsa ein zakakla. What do you mean kovsa ein zakakla? If it went out, why don't I have to rekindle it? You know, let's say, for example, a person had to take off his tefillin because his body was unclean at that point, or he had to go to the washroom, whatever. So when he gets out of the washroom, what's he going to do? he's going to put the tefillin back on again, right? And then you'll have sugyas, whether you make a bracha, you don't make a bracha the second time, fine. But what's kofs ainzok and close? The candle went out, and you're still within that time period of misha tishka chama shetichle regem neshuk. For sure, you'd have to rekindle it. The answer is hadlakos a mitzvah. That once you lit the candle and it had the potential, you know, you didn't put it in a place where the wind is going to come and blow it out. It had the potential, if everything goes well, of lasting until at shetichle regem neshuk. You were yotzei the mitzvah with the hadlaka. The hadlaka alone clinches the mitzvah. So the whole focus, the whole thrust of Ner Chanukah is on the hadlaka, the act of lighting it. But what happens now on the flip side? Not the case where you did a proper hadlaka and then it went out, but where you did an improper hadlaka. Is it enough just to relocate the Ner in a place where it has to be, which means below 20 Amo? So the answer is, that would be appropriate if you hold Hanachos of Mitzvah. The Mitzvah is not the Hadlaka, but just making sure that the Ner is there, located in the right place. Then all I have to do, like in the case of a Korah and Heter Mavud, is just lower it below 20 Amo. I would simply lower my Ner Chanukah below 20 Amo. And that would be perfect. That's called Hanachos of Mitzvah. But we paskin, like the man the Omar, Hadlakos of Mitzvah. And the Mechaber, when he codifies this, he says, Hadlakos of Mitzvah leficha kofsa ein zakikla. Meaning the reason why you don't have to rekindle the lamp is because the mitzvah was achieved and accomplished with the Hadlaka. If the whole mitzvah is focused on and concentrated on the Hadlaka, then we can begin to understand that if you did Hadlaka above 20 Amma, that Hadlaka is invalid. And therefore, psula. What does it mean, psula? Hadlaka psula. And what's the thrust? What's the impact of hadlaka psula? What's the halakhic ramification of hadlaka psula? You have to blow it out. You have to lower it. And then you have to have hadlaka ksheira. So here we have the exception to the rule. The rule was that if it's a derabbanan, and the paradigm of that is going to be korah, then all you have to do is yamayit. But says Tosfos, the exception to the rule, even in the case of a derabbanan, is Ner Chanukah, where yamayit would not be sufficient because of the principle called hadlakos mitzvah. And that's why, says Tosfos, Rabbi Tanchum in his drasha went out of his way to substitute what normally would have been the anticipated word, namely yamayit, and instead he formulated as psula. Psula to tell you that the hadlak itself is psula. And now by lowering it, you'll only have hanukkah, but you won't have hadlaka ksheira. The hadlaka itself is not a valid hadlaka, and therefore you have to rekindle the light. So, did you want to say something?
Yeah, no, a question. I apologize. Maybe I missed. Sukkah is not the rabbanah. It's
the rice. Correct.
Rice. So therefore, psula was correct, or you might...
Correct. And the thrust of psula is that you can't just lower your schach. And there are, as I said before, the different ways of doing that, that's not sufficient. You've got to take the schach and remove it, and then put it back on and replace it. Okay. And that is conveyed to us by one single choice of a word, namely, psul. Alan?
But in essence, you're not comparing apples and apples, because on a Hanukkah candle, you're talking about the 20 amot from the street level. Where in Skach, if I have my balcony up here, you're talking from the balcony there, the floor of the sukkah. So you're talking different heights.
We're assuming now that the that Lamala Miesrim Amma is possible. You see, the Gemara has three approaches at the beginning of Sukkah as to why Lamala the Esrim Amma is psula. You're right. According to one Mandi Omer, it would be totally in the floor of your sukkah. Like you said, if you have a sukkah high up, then maybe we'd calculate 20 Amma. According to another Mandi Omer, it depends on ground level. So, Alan, if we had time, I don't have time right now, we would go through the whole complicated sugya, which require hours of work, as to why Lamala Miesrim Amma is possible. But as you'll soon see in the next line in the Gemara, we're assuming now that the reason why the sukkah, Lamala Miesrim Amma is psula, is because of a principle called, and we'll see it in a minute, Lo Shalta Ba'ena. Okay, so wait a second. So what do we have so far? We have now the sheet of Tosis, and the sheet of Tosis is that that in his final presentation, the law of Chanukah candle that was lit above Esrim is Yechabenu, he's got to extinguish it, V'yema Etenu, he's got to lower it, V'yachsa V'yadliken. And that's all indicated by the choice of the word psula, meaning in and of itself you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. It's not just a technicality, like in the case of mavui, where you have to lower it, but rather the entire maisa mitzvah is considered invalid, and therefore you have to start from scratch. Now, Rabbi Tanchum adds another concept, ukim mavui. Now again, here in the case of mavui, according to Tosfos, really, it's not the same halacha, because in the case of mavui, we just need to get that heker. There's no maisa, there's no action which the halacha requires of setting up the mavui. You just have to guarantee that the mavui is in the right place in order to be matir tiltul in the mavui, that the korah, I'm sorry, is in the right place. So here, the word yamayit is absolutely appropriate. And this is not, in a sense, it's not parallel to the case of Ner Chanukah. So that's what Tosfos points out here, that the use of the use of the word, or the formulation of the word kimavui, as if to say that Ner Chanukah has the same status as a mavui. In both cases, it's got to be below Esrim Amah. It's not a perfect equation, because again, in the case of mavui, the Mishnah is going to say that lamala mi Esrim Amah yimayit. All he has to do is what? Lower the korah, but in the case of Ner Chanukah, it's going to be psula. It's not enough if he lowers the Ner Chanukah. Once it's lit, he's got to rekindle it below Esrim Amah. That's more or less a summary of what we learned here. In the footnote, he writes that the Gemara Sukkah, at the beginning of Sukkah, Omru Kama Ta'amim, the Gemara offers a whole array of explanations as to why the Sukkah is psula if it's above Esrim Amah. And he points out that according to Rabbah, the reason is because if the sukkah, the schach of the sukkah is above Esrim Amah, then the tzel of the schach, let me say it another way, the tzel inside the sukkah is not being afforded by the schach. The schach is too high up to give us tzel. In the language of Rabbah, It goes like this: Adam Yosef b'sukkah v'Yosef tachas tzel hasukkah shaschach gavol amalam yesrim amah eno Yosef tachas tzel hasukkah. I guess you'd say the following: when the sun is at its zenith, at let's say 12 noon, let's say, then at that point the schach, even if it's very high up, will afford some element of tzel, but that's only a very small element of tzel if you're directly under the schach and it's at midday when the sun is on top. But basically, there's no protection of tzel that's offered by the schach with lamala mi esrim ama. So that's what he says the following. Okay. Now let's talk about Chanukah. Why is Chanukah possible lamala mi esrim ama? So in order to explain that, I think we have to see another drasha of Rabbi Tanna. Let's see the next line in the Gemara, on the second line of the page. The Omer Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says the following. Now, take a look at the names over here. On Omid Beis, on the previous Omud, it says, Omer Rav Kahana, Dorish Rav Nosan Bar Miniyomi Mishmei de Rabbi Tanna. So the train here is the exact identical train. Dorash Rabbi Nosan Bar Miniyomi Mishmei de Rabbi Tanchum, and now Rabbi Tanchum is going to darshan in the parsha of Mechiras Yosef. Now, ostensibly, Mechiras Yosef has nothing to do with Ner Chanukah. So if in the
that we read it,
give me 2 minutes here. But I'm just saying the following because I want to explain one group of Rishonim. Then Larry, you'll tell me the other group of Rishonim. But first, let me present to you one group of Rishonim. There's an entire cadre of Rishonim who say the following: that if you were to quote the parsha of Mechiras Yosef in the context of a shir in Chanukah, the Rebbe would have every right to throw you out of shir. Why? Because it's totally irrelevant to Ner Chanukah. No, so why does the Gemara quote this over here? And the answer is because of this trend. And we have a principle which Rashi develops in many sugyas and shas, that once you start with a certain train, and this rabbi says in the name of this rabbi, in the name of that rabbi, then we want to go ahead and mention other halachas or drushas that were presented by the same train. That's one approach. However, Abosai, what we want to study today is the approach of the Tartmima. I think I mentioned to you that the Tartmima lived approximately, I'm just guessing, around 75 years ago. He lived in our times. And his father was the great Aruch HaShulchan, if you heard of him. Their last name was Epstein. And what he did is he wanted to convey the connection between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh, meaning how to interpret the words of a pasuk when it's a little bit strange, when the words of the pasuk are a little bit, there's an anomaly in the words of the pasuk, and explain it with Torah Shebal Peh. So what he does is, if you're familiar with the Torah Tmima, I got it as a gift for my bar mitzvah. It's one of the best gifts I got for my bar mitzvah, because the Torah Tmima is a very, very helpful tool. And what he does is, on every pasuk, he gives you a summary, so to speak, of all the statements of Chazal on that pasuk. And that's only half of the avoda that he did. The greatest contribution is that he has footnotes on the bottom. And in his footnotes, he took it upon himself to try to explain what was the connection between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh, between the pasuk itself and the drush on the pasuk. So the Tartmima is going to claim that if we understand the connection between Rabbi Tachum's drasha and the words of the pasuk here in this case, in the context of Mechiras Yosef, we'll begin to understand why the Gemara insisted on placing this here in the context of Ner Chanukah. It's not just a matter of the train, if you know what I mean. So let's take a look at the drasha, and then we'll take a look at the Tartmima. I don't have the Tartmima in front of me, although it's here in the Beis Medrash, but I do have a summary of the Tartmima here. Okay. Omar Av Kahana, again. My Dichsiv. What does the Pasuk mean when it says that the brothers of Yosef decided not to kill Yosef, but rather to throw him into a bar? Now, presumably, if you remember, Reuven wanted to save his brother Yosef. Reuven felt a certain element of responsibility, but he didn't really do the job 100%. And then Yehuda steps up to the plate and he says, "Ma betza ki nargenu," and he also tries to tell them, "Why should we kill him?" And then they take him out of the bar and they sell him as an eved. So they get a little profit on the deal. The profit wasn't much, but it was worth a couple of pairs of shoes. But in any event, Reuven was the first to make this effort to try to save his brother. And they decide, instead of killing him, to throw him into a bar. But the Torah describes this bar. Now there are two words, or shall I say two phrases, one is a single word and one is a phrase, to describe the nature of this ditch. Okay. And it says, Vabar rake. So that's the first emphasis on the word rake. And then it says, Einbo mayim. There's no water in it. And Rabbi Tanchum is bothered by the double language over here. Mimashma shenemar vabar rake. And he asks it as a rhetorical question, Eini yodea she'einbo mayim? Do I not realize that there's no water? It says rake. Rake indicates that it's totally empty. Now here, we have to understand one of the rules by which we darshan the Torah. You know, there are many, I think it's called in fancy English, hermeneutic principles. I don't know if that comes from the Greek or whatever it is. So one of those principles is ein miut achar miut ela l'rabos. When the Torah says an exclusion and then another exclusion, the second exclusion is coming to add something. And here we have two exclusions. Number one, the bar reik means excluded from any substance, any entity that's inside the bar. And ein bo mayim, it's excluded from water. Ma tamad lomer ein bo mayim. So again, if it's a miut achar miut, it has to be a ribui. Mayim ein bo, aval nechashim v'akravim yesh bo. It doesn't have water in it, but it does have nechashim v'akravim. These are various types of serpents and scorpions. And basically, what Rabbi Tanchum is trying to convey here is that al pi derech hateva, there's no way that you could survive such a bar. And yet a miracle happened, and Yosef was saved. And he, and again, we always hope and pray that Bnei Yisrael would achieve miracles in which we, unfortunately, with this Shabbos, this past Shabbos, we didn't have that, but that we should be protected from danger. And that's what happened, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened here in the nature of things, and he saved Yosef HaTzadik. Now, what did the brothers know about this bar? If they knew that this bar was occupied by Nechoshim Vakravim, then something very strange is going on over here. They really understood that Al Pi Derech HaTeva, and again, they accused Yosef of being what's called a Rodef. Are you familiar with that term? Okay, what does it mean, a Rodef? That Yosef was trying to undermine their position as the Shiftei Ka, in which case they would all be cut out, and Yosef himself would be the father of Klal Yisrael. And all this has to do with what's called the Klola. Klola means that Yaakov Avinu had a certain power, which is a metaphysical supernatural power, to give a whammy to anybody, and that whammy would come true. So that in their mindset, and they convened the Beis Din for this, and they decided that Yosef was trying to get Yaakov Avinu to put a whammy on them. Because Havius Dibasam Ra. So fine. So if this whammy would have happened, that would have been the end of all the Shvatim except for Yosef. So they judged him, again, this is very complicated, very profound, they judged him as what? As a Rodef. Huh. So on the one end, if they judged him as a Rodef, it meant that Shamayim, because according to Chazal, Shamayim also was sort of part and parcel of this Beis Din. They only had 9 members, you have to calculate that, and the 10th member of the court was a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And Hashem was on board, meaning as if to say that they believed that God gave them the green light to go ahead. Now, if God gave them the green light to do away with Yosef, snub him out, as we'd say, right, mafioso style, because he was a Rodev, then why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring about a miracle and save Yosef from the Nechoshim and the Akravim? So apparently, there's a piece of this puzzle that's missing over here, because if they think that they're justified and God is on their side to destroy Yosef, then just 1 second, if they believe that God is on their side, then they should have killed him. And if, on the other hand, they believed that they weren't going to kill him, then they could, and Reuven persevered, and therefore they would throw him into the bar and he would somehow survive, how would it be possible that they could throw him into a bar that's full of Nechoshim Vakravim, and that he would survive? Again, they didn't believe for one moment that he, Yosef, would experience a miracle, because in their calculation, God had decided together with them that Yosef was a Rodef, and he had to be put to death. So I'll read to you the footnote here. He writes, "Bevadai, it's clear, shelo hayu hanechashim vakravim nirim, that they weren't aware of the nechashim vakravim. Velo yadu achi Yosef sheyeshnam sham, sheim yadu achi echav. If they would know that he had, that they were Nechoshim Vakravim and yet he survived, then it would really mean that God was intervening and saving Yosef. And therefore their whole plot was mistaken, and they were wrong to assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the okay. So here I want to read to you the Torah Tmima. The Torah Tmima says the following, and then we'll come back to what we said before. Yesh levayer smichus hamamorim. Why is it that the Gemara brings out these two statements of Eritarfa? Number one, that a Ner Chanuk above 20 Amma is psula. Number two, the Rabbi Tarchum says that in the pit there were Nechoshim v'akrav. So the Torah Tmina says the following, that the smichus haparshios is based on the following. Ketzad hishlichu ha'achem es Yosef lebar. How could they have thrown Yosef into the bar if they decided we're not going to directly what word should I use? It's called biyadayim in Hebrew. They're not going to actually murder him. In other words, if he dies, he dies, but they're not going to kill him. But if they're in a chashim and a kravim, then they're basically throwing him to his death. The echlo chashishu sheyomus me'an nechashim v'akravim shebo. This is the question that the Torah wants to answer by formulating this strange lashon of habor reik v'einbo einbo mayim. And what it means is the following. He says the following. Second. It says, Vayashlichu oso habara. They cast him into the bar. And the Torah Tmima quotes Mesechta Tamid, and based on the Mefarish, the commentary on Mesechta Tamid, he says that Hashlocha, when you throw someone with a Hashlocha, Hashlocha means that he's going to really fall down very low, is at least a minimum of Esrim Amah. Okay. So they threw him into a bar that's Esrim Amah, that's 20 Amos deep. Again, that's a piece of the puzzle that we don't have over here, because there's no mention here of the fact that the depth of this bar was Esrim Amah, am I right? In the Gemara. So that's the Chiddush here of the Torah Tmima, based on Masechta Tamid, that the word Vayashlich indicates that they threw him down below Esrim Amah, to a depth that was below Esrim Amah. Oh. However, Kaimalon, we know from Rabbi Tarchon's original statement, that something that's out of, that's beyond Esrim Amah, is out of range, v'ein eino shel adam sholetes bo. Again, we know that in terms of height, the Torah Tmim is saying that we're going to apply that even in terms of depth. And that was Rabbi Tarfon's statement comparing Ner Chanukah to Sukkah u'Mavui. What was the point of comparing it to Sukkah u'Mavui? That the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is pirsum hanes, but somebody who's walking on the street, he doesn't lift his eyes and perceive that which is so high up, it's above 20 amah, and that's why the schach is not leman yedu dar sechem, you can't be aware of the schach, it's so high up, and that's why the mavui is not a heker, because the people who use the mavui don't raise their eyes 20 amah. Is af habar, so too in the case of the bar, sheshlichu bo, v'hoya bi'omek esrim amah, is therefore ein I eino shel adam sholetes bo. We're going to take the principle that Rabbi Tarfon applies to justify the halacha in Chanukah, and we're going to apply it in depth in terms of the bar into which they threw Yosef, because again we're assuming that the bar was at least 20 amos deep, because it says vayashlech and ein hashlocha p'chusa mi esrim amah. But now we're going to add another element to the equation, that they didn't see what was below esrim amah. And that's the point of this Gemara. The point of this Gemara is to tell you that the Achim were unaware of the existence of Nechashim and Akravim, because they, at this point, they didn't want to kill him. And if they would have been aware of the inhabitants of the Nechashim and Akravim at this depth, then they wouldn't have gained, you know, that we're not killing him, because now they would in effect be causing his death directly by throwing and casting him into the bar. But the answer is, and that's where Rabbi Tanchum comes, so how were they able to cast him into a bar that was occupied by Nechashim Akravim without killing him? And again, if he would survive, they would realize that God was not on their side, that he was doing a miracle. The answer is they were unaware of the Nechashim Akravim. Says the Torah Tmimo, why were they unaware of the Nechashim Akravim? And the answer to that lies in Rabbi Tarchum's first drasha, that anything that's above, or now we're applying it to below Esrim Amah, is outside of the normal perception of the eye. Ein Adam shall let this go. Therefore, they were unaware of the Nechashim v'Akravim. So they believed that al pi derech hateva he could survive. And based on this presentation, we now have, according to Torah Tmimah, an interconnection or an interdependence between the two statements of Rabbi Tarfon, of Rabbi Tanchum. The first thing Rabbi Tanchum is that Ein Ayin shall let us begova Esrim Am, and that's why Ner Chanukah for the purpose of Pirsum Anes has the same psul as a Sukkah Lamalavi Esrim Am, or a Mavui, a Korah that's above Esrim Am. Now that we know Ein Adam shall let us, we can now begin to answer the question, how is it possible that the brothers who threw, they cast Yosef into the bar, if the bar was Esrim Amma and they weren't aware of the Nechashim Vakravim, and now we can add another element perhaps into the equation, that they didn't even bother checking out the bar. They didn't make that extra effort. Now, like for example, if you have an Ner Chanukah up on Esrim Amma, a Sukkah above Esrim Amma, if you stretch your neck, or you get yourself a pair of binoculars, you know, you make a little bit more of an effort, you can discover the existence of the Ner Chanukah or of the, but the halacha operates within the frame of reference that a person is not stretching out his neck and he's not making that extra effort. And here's the accusation against the brothers. Well, you're claiming our hands are clean. We didn't murder him. We just threw him into a bar, and we were unaware of the existence of the Nechashim Vakravim. Well, why didn't you make another extra effort? You know, look into the bar and stretch your neck out to see and clarify that there was no Nechashim Vakravim. Apparently, they didn't care too much. They were half-baked. In other words, on the one hand, they didn't want to kill him directly, but on the other hand, you know, they'd be very happy if he died. And this is all part of the pasuk of Bar Reik Ein Bo Mai. This is what he quotes in the name of the Torah Tamima. I edited it a little bit, I embellished it in my own language. In the next paragraph, he quotes someone by the name of the Pnei Shlomo. Now, I can't tell you who the Pnei Shlomo is, I don't know. Maybe he's Reb Shlomo Kluger, I don't know. He says, Madua dafka b'ner Chanukah yesh din shel pirsum anes ve'ilu b'shar mitzvus b'achilas matzah ein din shel pirsum. U'bir shanisim shenasu b'golui, that any nes that was done in a revealed way ein tzarch lefarsimam, we don't have to publicize. So Yitzias Mitzrayim was b'golui. Everybody saw the great miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and therefore achilas matzah, which is a zecher to that miracle, it doesn't require any element of publicity. I don't have to publicize my achilas matzah. I don't need to eat my matzah on the outside of my house. There's an interesting element into the equation that the nes happened within the heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. Nobody, you know, except for those few people who were there, the kohanim, no one could view and see the nes. Is therefore, we have an obligation, lefarsim, to publicize the nes begolui. So what does this have to do with Mechiras Yosef? V'kasher rotza Reuven lahatzil es Yosef miyad ha'achim. Reuven said to the brothers, let's say he was motivated to save Yosef. Omar, he says, lahashlich es Yosef lebar. Now, according to the Pnei Moshe, when Reuven said to the brothers, let's throw him into a pit, this is not the way we said it until now, that what Reuven was saying to the brothers, let's not directly kill Yosef. Lo hayodea, the brothers were not aware of the fact, and is kaving litova, that Reuven's intention was that Yosef would survive the fall, and then Reuven would come back and save Yosef. But rather they thought that Yosef would actually die in the bar. So this is a whole other approach. Oh, Mishum Kach, now the nest that occurs to Yosef occurs where? In private. Okay, because they were unaware of the fact that this bar was inhabited by Nechashim Vakravim. Mishum Kach, therefore, since the nest took place concealed, Pirsimo Akosuv, the Torah went out of its way to publicize the miracle. And it says the following, that Laman Hitzil Oso Miyodom Lashivo El Achiv, that the whole purpose of Reuven, his motivation was to save Yosef, And lefi ze tam smichus amamorim hu ki mimash pirsum haTorah es ma'isa Reuven shenistkavim letova lemeidim anu sheyesh lefarsem es hanistar. That why did the Torah go out of its way to indicate that there was a chashim in the bar is in order to publicize the great miracle that happened for the sake of Yosef to sell his save his life. And why did the Torah feel compelled to reveal that is because that nest took place benistar. And how do we know that that nest took place benistar? Because they threw him into a bar that was that the brothers had no clue that there were any Nechashim Vakravim. This parallels the requirement of being Mefarsem, the nest of Chanukah, because the nest of Chanukah, like the nest that transpired for Yosef, was Benistar, it was inside the Heichal, and that's why Lamala Meyesrim Amo is possible, because there's no Pirsum on Nes, Lamala Meyesrim Amo. So again, I would say that the Pnei Shlomo has a shall we call it a loose connection to between the two mamorim, and that is that lamala miyesrim in Chanukah is possible because a privateness has to be publicized, and above 20 am is not publicity. And the parallel here is that nobody knew about the nechoshim v'akravim that inhabited this bar. Therefore, the nest that transpired for Yosef to save his life was benistar. Why did the Torah therefore go out of its way to say that he was saved, l'man hitzel oso, in order to publicize that which is nistar? That's his parallel between the two. Then he quotes the Ksav Sofer, and then we'll go on in the Gemara. He says, Reuven lo samach al nes sheyatzil Yosef. Reuven, when he intended to come back to the bar, it was because of the principle of ein somchin al nes. You don't rely on a miracle. V'lachein dog latzilo, Reuven took the step-by-step process in order to save his brother. V'chein achashmonoim lo somcha al nes. The Nilchamu, the battle of the military campaign of the Chashmonaim was based on the fact that Ein Somchin Al Nes. V'chein, and so to Benes Pach HaShemen, Hoyashemen Muot, Elosh and Israba Al Yidei Ad Nes, and here too they would pour the Shemen into the Nair, and they're not going to rely on a miracle, that from Shemayim, you know, they're going to get Shemen. Is lachain, therefore says the Ksav Sofer smichus amamor and bol ulami she'ein li odom lismoch al hanes, to tell you that Reuven went out of his way to do whatever he could actively to save his brother Yosef. He didn't rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intervention, and therefore yesh lanu lasos kama shenuchal b'derech hateva. So this Rabosei touches on a very deep philosophical issue of to what extent do we rely on Nes and rely on Hashem's intervention, to what extent do we have to do a maximum of Hishtaglus to use Teva in the way that we have to do it. So let's say a person will say, well, I want to sit and learn, I'm going to dedicate myself Yom HaLayla to Torah study, and the man is going to come down from Shemayim. So in such a case, we would apply the principle of Ein Somchin Al Nes. Don't rely on Man Min HaShemayim. You'd be starving because you don't have any means of... Now that doesn't mean that you miss Rabbi Berzon's class and you go out to work because Ein Somchin Al Nes. That's not a Nes. You know, I promise you, you can attend my shir and you'll still get the Parnassah that you need. But if you're in dire straits and you have no source whatsoever of Parnassah, then to say Somchin Al Nes... You know, some people say that in the case of a father-in-law, if you marry a girl, then you could be somech al nes. What's the nes? The nes is that your father-in-law has a PhD. You remember this? Mm-hmm. And PhD is Rashi Tevis, Natrikan for what? Pop has dough. So that's that. Then you can't be somech al nes. That's what they say in certain yeshivish circles, that you rely on the PhD. But Pashup Shad is, and that's what, according to the Ksav Sofer, that's what, you see, the Ksav Sofer came from Hungary, you know, from a city called Prezburg. You know, in that city, they had a similar philosophy to what went on very close by in Germany at the time of Rav Shimshel Fal Hirsch, which is much earlier in history, of Torah im Derech Eretz, which means that you dedicate yourself to a livelihood, and then you enhance that by Torah. You don't say, well, I'm going to dedicate myself Yom V'Layla to Torah and expect that God is going to do me a miracle. That was the Hashkafa over there. There are other places in New Jersey and elsewhere today where they're Somech al, either Al Anes or on the PhD, I don't know. And this Gemara, according to Ksav Sofer, making this parallel between Reuven's Ishtablus to save his brother and the Ishtablus of the Chashmonaim to go out to battle, it's all based on and reflects the sheet of Ein Somchin Al Anes.
They say they want to allow yeshiva students to have two wives because she can't live on one father-in-law.
Ah, I see. That's good. I like that. But this is a very deep philosophical question about, you know, the balancing between Ishtablus and Bitochen and relying on Hashem.
Which Eric says, though, no, he has that right. He signed a contract.
Right. So that also is going to somehow come from Shemayim, if you hold Somchen al Anes. The strange thing is that the Ramban, in last week's parasha, not the one we just read, he says that Avraham Avinu should have been Somech al Anes, and Avraham Avinu was guilty when he took Sarah down to Mitzrayim of exposing her to danger and himself to danger. He should have stayed in Eretz Yisrael, even though, despite the fact that there was a very severe famine in Eretz Yisrael, but he should have relied on God, that God would spare him. So that's a pellet. And then Chazal take Yosef HaTzadik to task, because you remember he told the Sarah Mashkim to remind me, to mention me to Paro.
2 years.
Yeah, Chazal says he was punished for the next 2 years in the Beis HaSor. Why? Because he should have relied on Hashem. Comes to Ein Somchen al Anes, you know. Yeah. Why should he be taken to task?
But in Avram's case, it's one of the ten trials going down
here. Well, it works like this. According to Rashi, the trial was to see that he wouldn't be maharher, which means that he wouldn't ask questions on the divine being. Yesterday you told me, lech lecha, el haaretz asher arecha, and today you're telling me there's a famine and I got to get out. You know, there's a contradiction in God's two, so to speak, commands. That was the Nisayan. But the Ramban has a different sheet. The Ramban's Nisayan is whether he would actually leave the land in the case of the famine, or would he rely on God. And according to the Ramban, you know, the Avraham Avinu chata chet gadol. I mean, that's the language of the Ramban. In last week's parasha, the Ramban goes so far as to say that the reason why we were punished, meaning our ancestors, the descendants of Avraham, and we went down to Mitzrayim, he has a principle, the Ramban, that b'makom ha-mishpat shamu achet, that when you see that God meets out punishment in a certain place, it must be that in that place there was a sin. So why was the punishment meted out to Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim? What sin took place in Mitzrayim? And the Ramban identifies that sin as the sin of Avraham for going down to Mitzrayim. And he activates the principle of Ma'aseh Avos Sima L'Banim. And it's really wild, this Ramban, because, you know, Chet Gadol, you know, to describe Avraham Avinu, you know, those terms, that's a pretty heavy accusation against Avraham Avinu. But again, I'm just pointing out that, you know, this whole issue about when you rely on Hashem and when you have to go out there and do your maximum of Ishtadlus, that's a fundamental issue. It's not just a philosophical issue. It's very, very practical, almost on a daily basis. You know, at what point do I say, God, you know, you take care of it? So the Ksav Sofer's approach would be, you do your maximum, and at the end of the day, be aware of the fact that even after you do your maximum, everything depends upon Hashem. And the Mefarshim say that that approach is very, very relevant or really comes to the fore at the time of a geula, at the time of redemption. That part of the process of redemption is to realize that no matter what we do, and we have to do whatever we have to do, but at the end of the day, it all depends upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein lanu lishon ela al avinu shebashamayim. So in terms of the military campaign that we have against all our wonderful neighbors, here they, in Israel, when they want to refer to the Arabs, they call them Bnei Dodim. Have you ever heard that? You know, our cousins, you know, because they come from Yishmael, who comes from Avram, so we're cousins. That's a euphemism for the Arabs. So we're surrounded by cousins, if you pardon that phrase, and now we have to go out and do what we have to do. But it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's really precarious. You know, it's a very dangerous situation. I spoke to a general in the army once. We had a general who came to speak to us. Was anybody here that when he came? It was about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. That's when things were really hot in Gaza. Now again, we unfortunately looks like it's heating up again at the speed of light. And I came to him after the lecture, and I said to him, "I'm overwhelmed by fear." You know, when you think about what's going on here, he said to me, "This is a general in the army. I mean, he's a retired general," and he said to me, "Don't worry. You have no clue what the power of the Israeli army is like. No clue in your wildest dreams." So that statement of that general has kept me going for the last couple of years, because every time I read the newspaper, I think, how are we going to survive this, you know? Anyway, okay, Rabosai. So let's see where we're up to here. Okay, now we've begun and almost completed the sugya of what I call the location of the Ner Chanukah. So let's just review the 2 points that we know, and then we go on to the third point, which will be for tomorrow, that we don't know. So what we do know is that the halacha requires that the Ner Chanukah be placed outside your house below the height of 10 tefachim. According to some Rishonim, that's absolutely critical. According to other Rishonim, that's recommended, but you can... I'm sorry?
20.
Below 10 tefachim. Did I say below 10? I meant to say below 10 tefachim.
You said that.
Right, okay. So I'll repeat myself just to make sure I said it right, because I always get confused. That number one, the first halacha is that where should the Ner Chanukah be located outside my house below 10 tefachim? The second halacha that we know is what's the maximum height of the Ner Chanukah, after which its possible is 20 amah. And the third halacha, which we haven't learned yet, and that's where we're about we're about to address this question, is where is the Ner Chanukah located, which has two issues. Number one, what's the proximity between the Ner Chanukah and the Pesach HaBayis, the opening to the house? So let's say, for example, I have an entranceway. Can I put my Ner Chanukah 10 amos to the right or 10 amos to the left? Or does it have to be within a very narrow place? That's going to be the halacha of Pesach HaSomach LePesach. Tefach HaSomach LePesach. And number two, should it be on the right side, which is the same side where the mezuzah is located, or should it be on the left side, so I have the mezuzah on my right side and the Ner Chanukah on the left side, and if I'm surrounded by mitzvahs when I enter it into the house? And it's fascinating that what I call metaphysics should have a halachic impact. What do I mean by metaphysics? This whole idea that when a person enters into a house, that entry, you know, the whole experience of entering into a house metaphysically has an impact on a person. And that's something that's supernatural. And what's the prime example of that? When you enter into a house, it's going to have an impact on you. The mezuzah. Rashi says in Masechet Pesachim that the mezuzah on the right side is going to protect you when you enter into the house. If Rashi didn't say it, I would say it belongs to, you know, to Kabbalah, to metaphysics. But Rashi says that, and that's why Rashi says the mezuzah, the obligation of mezuzah, is not dependent upon the ownership of the house, but rather on the one who lives in the house. That's called Chovas Hadar. So Reuven owns the house and Shimon lives in the house. Shimon is obligated to put up the mezuzah, right? Because he lives in the house, not Reuven who owns the house. And the reason for that is Rashi says that Shimon, who lives in the house, needs the shmirah, he needs the protection of the mezuzah. That's a weird integration of what I call supernatural with halacha. Usually the halacha operates with, you know, within the dry and surface level, you know, it's a cookie cutter kind of thing. We don't go into Kabbalah. You know, again, you want to know skulis, and you want to talk about Gilgul and Shavuos, you can learn Kabbalah. But when you're talking about halacha, you know, don't introduce these Kabbalistic supernatural concepts. But here Rashi says that the reason why, this is Rashi Pesachim Daf Dalet, if you ever want to look it up, your eyes will pop out. You know, people think it's only Chabad that'll tell you to check the mezuzahs, right? And you know what I'm talking about? You find that if you have a chas shalom, you have trouble with a child, you check the mezuzah, there's a hole in levanecha. You've heard stories like that, right? But the idea that the mezuzah protects you when you enter into the house, that wasn't generated by Chabad. That predates Chabad by a good couple of centuries. And Rashi has it. And a similar idea is going to be with regard to the Ner Chanukah, that the Ner Chanukah should be positioned, you know, such that when you go into your house, you are surrounded by the mezuzah on one side and the Ner Chanukah on the other side. And that's going to be a critical halach in terms of locating the Ner Chanukah. So that'll be the last piece that will fit into our discussion about location of Ner Chanukah. But we need that tomorrow, if you could please remind me, I want to go through one se'if in Shulchan Aruch that's totally dedicated to the halacha l'maisa about where to locate it. And perhaps we could talk about putting the Ner Chanukah l'mala mi'esrimam in the case of an apartment building. Okay, where the people who might see it, because they're on the same level as you. And I think, Alan, you were touching on that issue before. And then we go on to a major sugya about what am I allowed to do in close proximity to the Ner Chanukah. Am I allowed to count my mos? Am I allowed to read a book, a sefer? You know, what are the parameters of Asur L'shtameish Li'orah? That's going to be the next major sugya of Ner Chanukah, which is here on Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph. And that's B'li Neder, what we're going to do tomorrow. Okay then, so I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day, and if anyone has any questions, now's a good time to ask, but the shiur is officially open. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
My first halacha is it can't be more than 10 amos high. Why do you have to be told they can't be up to 20 amos? I mean, it depends on the fachim. If you look at the fachim, why tell me it can't be as high as...
Right, so this seems to reflect the shita that I told you, most Rishonim, that although you are recommended to put the Ner Chanukah, if all things are equal, below 10 fachim, but if you raised it above 10 fachim, the Ner Chanukah is still kosher. Now, if you hold that below 10 fachim is absolutely critical, then we have to understand the answer to your question. What's this business about Esrim Amos? If above 10 fachim, it's already possible. So if you remind me, we'll pick up that question tomorrow. All right.